First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We'll start you with some headlines around the world of sports that you need to know. Former Washington Bullets player and coach Wes Unseld died Tuesday morning. According to his family, he was 74 years old. The family said in a statement that he had lengthy health issues, most recently with pneumonia. The family statement, quote, "He was the rock of our family, an extremely devoted patriarch who reveled in being with his wife, children, friends, teammates. He was our hero and loved playing basketball and working around the game of basketball for the cities of Baltimore and Washington, D.C., cities he proudly wore on his chest for so many years." Our condolences go out to the Unseld family. Next up on the headlines you need to know, we'll stick in the world of the NBA, and it revolves around Zion Williamson. Remember, there are accusations that Zion had some benefit in going to Duke, and it's gone to court at this point. Well, a Florida State court judge on Tuesday denied the Pelicans' rookie request to stay discovery into whether he was eligible under NCAA rules when he played one season at Duke. So the 11th Circuit Court judge ruled that Williamson will be required to answer questions and requests for admissions from attorneys at this point who are suing. There are two attorneys suing Williamson for $100 million for breaching their marketing agreement. So we'll see what that means moving forward, obviously, as we continue all eyes on what that will mean next. And lastly, over the weekend, former Indiana football player Chris Beatty was shot and killed Saturday night in Indianapolis during a violent weekend in the city. Suffered multiple gunshot wounds during a shooting late Saturday night at a downtown intersection, was pronounced dead at the scene. He was 38. Our condolences go out to his family as well. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. You know the phone number, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Now, if you listen every day, you listened yesterday, Stephen A. Got the opportunity yesterday to come on air and sort of speak to the nation and speak his truth and speak to people about what's on his heart and on his mind. And that's an incredible opportunity for Stephen A. And I'm thankful that Stephen A. got to take this slot and do some good with it. It's incredible. At the same time, I have plenty of things I want to say also. And so we're going to do that today. You know, if you've listened to me on any format at this point, that escapism is something that I often preach. And I often say, hey, you come to ESPN because you want to get away. And you come to ESPN because you want to think about different things. And I understand that, whether it was in music or whether it's in sports, I always took that responsibility seriously to give everybody the opportunity to think of other things. Unfortunately, in the world that we're in right now, I don't think that that's the right thing. And if anything, I find myself after days of questions and conversations with some of my close friends wondering if that was ever the right approach. Have I just sat back behind escapism and said, man, I'm going to provide escapism because it's much easier than talking about difficult issues? So that's what we're going to do. We're going to have real conversation today. We're going to do it in a different way than I think you've ever heard anywhere before on these shows about these issues. You're going to hear some First Take. We'll start there. But after that, we're going to get some real conversations that are raw and open, honest, between me and some of my closest friends here at ESPN that I respect the heck out of, that happen to also be black. And that conversation is going to be real, raw, open, and honest from them and from me about what we can be doing better, how we can approach things differently, what needs to change in the world, what I could be doing better, what they could be doing better. It's a real, open, raw moment. And I think what I'm trying to accomplish over the next 2 hours, if anything, what I'm trying to accomplish is bring some of what I've learned just from having better conversations with people that I love and respect over the last week. I've learned, I've grown, and I hope that over the course of the next couple hours, we can all do that together. If you want to be a part of this conversation, I will let you. We won't shy away from it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You're welcome to call in. You're welcome to get your points in. And we're welcome to have welcoming the conversations with you. What I'm not interested in today is a debate. I'm interested in a discussion, a real discussion where everybody has an emphasis on not just speaking, but also listening. That's what we're going to accomplish. We're going to start with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless doesn't play games. Get the unlimited plan, 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. Saves you up to 50% against the big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. We'll start with the Straight Talk that came from Michael Collins. We all know Michael Collins does a great job for this network covering, obviously, golf. Well, he joined First Take today because part of the process we're going through now is seeing comments and statements from teams and athletes. Well, Tiger Woods came out and made his statement. And the question is, how does that statement now make him look? Michael Collins joined Stephen A. and Max, and they discussed it.
when and what is right. As far as if you're an athlete that's an African American, if you're a young kid, as Harold said, let's say you're a rookie in a major sport that just came out and came from the hood. How can you take the right amount of time to think about how you feel and get that out there in an eloquent way when people are going to look at you and say you either took too long or calling you out to come out and say something? And if you do come out and say something, are you saying how you Michael. Truly feel? I had people already reach out to me and say, can you need to Michael. Come out and talk about this? And my response was, I don't know how. In a constructive way.
I'd like to respond to something.
Because of the anger that I feel.
Go ahead. All right, Stephen, I'd like to respond to something Michael said directly, because I brought up Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is not a rookie in some league who doesn't know how to deal with this. He's been around for decades now. He has had access to information, education, resources all over the place. I'm reminded this is a sport, Augusta, no African-American members till 1990, no female members till 2012. And when Tiger was going to play at Augusta, maybe in the early 2000s, that became an issue. Why aren't there any female members? He had profited from that Nike commercial, exploiting the idea that, I was not allowed to be here and there once upon a time. When it came time to stand up for women who were being excluded, he really didn't do anything. And again, he made a statement about respect for the office of the president and tried to make it sound as though he wasn't talking about, like, he was trying to have it both ways. And here he makes a plausible statement. It's fine on the surface, but I am dissatisfied with it.
Well, Max,
I understand exactly how you feel.
Hold on, Michael. Here's the deal. Here's what you're missing, Max. You got to understand. When certain people don't know or are not comfortable with who they are, you're comfortable in your own skin. Michael Collins is comfortable in his own skin. Tiger Woods once went on national airwaves and wouldn't identify himself with his own blackness. When we all know when the cops stop you, they know you black. I mean, we know this already. And so you have certain people that are comfortable with it and certain people that are not. What I'm saying to black America and what I'm trying to educate white America about as well is understand the difference. There's a difference between somebody who's oblivious, somebody who's ignorant, damn near fearful of their own identity, as opposed to somebody who's very comfortable and literally chooses, despite their comfort, to be cowardice. There's a difference, because that's where coward comes from. Coward doesn't come from
that's
ignorance.
A fine
coward,
distinction.
Cowardice comes from you know exactly who you are, what you are, you accept it, but then you want to be weak when the moment calls for you to be strong. That's entirely different than being lost. And some would argue that when it comes to blackness, at least in the past, because I don't know Tiger Woods, and I'm not trying to denigrate the man personally, but when it comes to blackness, you knowing you are a black man, and that is how you are going to be perceived. Once upon a time, Tiger Woods came across as somebody who didn't know any better.
Yep.
I think that's an excellent, important distinction he just made. But Stephen A. and Michael, I'll throw this to you, Michael. However he got there, he got there. And if you want to say he's lost as a black man, that's your prerogative. I'm saying, as a human being and an American citizen who is observing what is happening, he made an okay statement that's technically okay on the surface, but his points of emphasis tell me that it has not either it hasn't been thought through clearly, or if he has, I don't like the way he thinks.
It's a question of eloquence. This is a question of eloquence and speaking. And this is what I was saying as far as coming out with statements. And this is what Harold Varner III, and I completely agree with this. It is so difficult as someone who is viewed publicly when you are angry. And you want to tell people, in your words, that it's okay to lash out, knowing that that is not necessarily the right thing to do at this time. So that's what this a lot of times comes down to, is you are asking people who feel anger and feel a wanton need to go, I don't want to turn the other cheek anymore. I'm sick of doing that. It's not okay. You're asking those people to go, we need you to come forward and say peace. We need peace at this time. We need discussion. We need to talk. And it's hard to ask athletes to do things like that, regardless of their stature in their sport. It doesn't. What I'm saying is, as an African-American citizen of this country, how many times is enough? And now you go to athletes and you say, we need you to calm everyone down or be our voice, knowing that a lot of times what is underneath our voice is still that anger and disappointment and frustration.
That's Michael Collins' take today from First Take. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz, presented by Progressive Insurance. As I told you, we're going to spend the next couple hours having some real honest conversations that are raw and open. We're going to listen. That's my objective here, is to be incredibly real with some people that I consider to be close friends. Now, I understand that that's going to create a counter argument to that from some of the audience, and I'll let that argument come through. Kevin in Pennsylvania, I expect this. I know we're going to get it some, so go ahead. What's your take on it?
Well, I hate being part of this conversation, just to be honest. I mean, luckily I'm one of the demographic who hasn't been personally affected by this. I know everybody should definitely raise awareness for it. But, I mean, I work at Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, or I work at Harrisburg Hospital in Pennsylvania, and I've already been dealing with a lot with everything COVID because we have been selected to be the COVID floor. I look for, and how you said earlier about escapism, I prefer ESPN. Like, I try and focus on sports. I'm excited that sports are possibly coming back. And it's almost like I'm being forced to be part of this conversation. I know that it's kind of bad to say, but it's, in a way, like I said, whenever I come to ESPN, they're supposed to be conversating about sports. It's not really about sports. It's about the issue. And I understand that everybody should definitely raise awareness for it. But at the same time, whenever I'm trying to go home from work, I'm being stuck and forced being behind protesters that are right in front of my work on the First Street. And I can't go home then. So it's almost like, you know, I'm being forced to be part of this of this conversation. And I just prefer to do my own thing and just kind of live my own life. And I know that's what everybody else is trying to do. But at the same time, like I said, luckily I'm one of the demographics that hasn't been affected by this personally. And it's just like one of those things. I just don't want to be in conversation about it, but I'm being forced.
I get what you're saying. Stick to sports is going to be part of this conversation for a lot of people. I understand that people will say stick to sports as a nature because that's why you came to ESPN. And first and foremost, you're working in hospitals, man. Thanks for what you're doing. You're putting yourself at risk and that means the world. And, you know, obviously that's been a big part of our conversation as well. And look, if you listen to the show for more than 2 or 3 days, you know, that's what we typically do. I hope that over the course of the last couple of years, my work at ESPN that has been largely focused on sports gives me a little bit of wiggle room here on something that matters to me. And while you said, I understand, you know, hey, this doesn't necessarily directly impact you. It does. This impacts everybody. And at some point, if we can use whatever our collective voice is to improve this situation, I think that's what we're obligated to do. And that's what I want to do today. We're joined now by Dominique Foxworth of The Undefeated. And Dominique is not only one of the smartest people that I know, but Dominique's also somebody I consider a friend. So, Dominique, I've sat in the car and said the same exact thing that, you know, the caller just said, that there's an element of stick to sports and I want my escapism. And I think my mind was blown a couple of days ago, frankly, to be real, talking to Elle Duncan. And she said, hey, escapism in and of itself is a privilege many of us will never know. So when you hear people say, you know, stick to sports, they need the release. What is your retort to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a retort, honestly. Like, they can have that opinion or have that desire for us, but we don't have to listen. And it's going to be uncomfortable for them, and it's going to be uncomfortable for us. I expect to get criticized. I'm not going to say I like it necessarily, but I'm not going to shy away from it. But it's not – I don't need to convince – I feel like having to fight just to get an opportunity to speak about it is somewhat a waste of time. And those are people who we're going to have trouble reaching. And I'm not going to necessarily waste my time trying to convince him that lives are important. Because he said he works in the hospital through all this. So I understand. He understands that lives are important. And I understand that he probably, of many people right now, needs a reprieve. But it's not the 1600s where there aren't options. Like, there's lots of things he can watch on TV or on streaming networks. He could read a book. Like, there are plenty of things that he can do to get away. He can watch old sports. It's not like there's new sports to talk about, and this is a sports story. It feels like the most outspoken and active people right now are athletes, so I don't understand how this is not sticking to sports. So, like, I have empathy for people like that, but I wish that they had empathy for people like me.
Well, and I think there's a power to what you were just talking about, man. Like, when you talk about sports, one of the things that really hits me is when you go into it, I mean, you know me, I'm a Raiders fan, right? Like, if I'm in a bar, if I'm in a stadium and I'm watching a Raiders game, when the Raiders score, there is no thought of who's next to me, where they're from, what their background is, what they look like. I don't care. Like, somebody's got a Raiders shirt on, like, I'm high-fiving them, at least in the old world, right? I'm like, we're all hugging and we're celebrating it. And so I think there's, like, this power in my mind, and maybe I'm too altruistic, but it feels like the sports community has already accepted diversity when we can find commonality. So can't that be some sort of a launching pad to finding more commonality?
I guess. But I think the tough thing is we tiptoe around the idea equality is going to require some sacrifice from the people who are benefiting from the current structure. It's like, it's easy when you're in with a Raiders fan and someone scores a touchdown. That's good for you. That's good for him. We all feel better. But for us to change a system that has been structurally to the advantage of a group that they have enjoyed, and I'm not naive enough to think that all white people are rich or all white people have had an easy life. Like, I understand that there's disparity there, but the stats don't lie about the disproportionate nature, and, like, the history don't lie. The facts of the legislation that's been passed year after year and the oppression that takes place that has created this disparity, like, that is real. So the idea that they're then going to be faced with a decision. So the Raiders example is an interesting one because everyone feels good if they're Raiders fans. But at some point, for a real change to happen, they are going to need to sacrifice. They're going to need to put some skin in the game, and they're going to have to care. And they may not benefit from it. It may not hurt them, but it may not benefit from it. And it's so hard. Like I just talked about, everyone is inherently selfish. It is so hard to tell somebody to do something because it's right. And I know we all like to think we're good people, but this is like an opportunity to prove it. Being like good, in air quotes, whatever that means. Like, I think that means doing something that is helpful to other people, but is not to your benefit, and making a sacrifice in that situation that it may not help you. And I think we all have an obligation. I think you are in some ways like living out that obligation by doing shows like this right now, because it may not benefit you. It may turn off more of your listeners than it will benefit. And I have the same feeling when I go on Get Up and am like aggressive about white people needing to sacrifice or white people needing to commit. Like, I understand. Or when I talk aggressively about team owners needing to do more, like I know that they have a lot of power and it may not benefit me in the long run, but I feel like, and maybe this is me, some self-aggrandizement, but it makes me feel good. And I guess the same way sending out tweets make other people feel good and feel like they're having some impact, which I think they are having some impact, but I think that feeling is a nice one. And everyone likes to quote the Bible or quote Martin Luther King when it serves their purposes. But there's plenty of stuff in there that would suggest in the Bible and in the words of Dr. King that would suggest that the true measure of somebody is what they do for people who can't help them.
Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz talking to Dominique Foxworth. Foxworth, we're brought to you by your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams. So I'm going to be like really blunt and open and honest here for the world. Like, I grew up, as some people may know, with very little in a house that wasn't particularly good. And, you know, we were one box of mac and cheese for the day for the family poor and didn't really have a lot of means. And, you know, I'm a middle-aged white guy. I hear white privilege, and that's a statement that I just haven't known how to respond to for a long time because I didn't come from privileged means. So it's been sort of misassociated in my head. And I think the awakening for me over the last couple of days, I'm still trying to figure out how to better explain what it all means. Like, what would you say? Like, how am I supposed to handle a conversation where I don't feel like it came from privilege, but now I'm trying to understand that I do have it.
Right. I mean, you obviously absolutely did not come from privilege in a family or financial situation, but I think L explained it to you. You already mentioned it. Like, there are privileges that you are afforded that that we can never have. So I think that's one way to think about it. It's like a black person can make enough money to get into the place that they need to get into or to do some of the things that they need to do, but they can never make enough money to not be treated like a second-class citizen in some ways. They can never make enough money to escape things. Like, you can never have enough success that these issues don't impact you. And I think that's one way I think you can go about explaining what it is. And there are, like, plenty of, I think, things that are different. And there are assumptions made about you. That's a privilege. There are assumptions made about you that aren't made about me necessarily. People know us and we walk into a room together. There's plenty of assumptions that are going to be made that would probably benefit you before they benefit me, especially in like low work. So those are privileges that people are talking about. And Elle, as a black woman, I think being a woman is another dynamic that we just can't quite understand. So like, as a man, there are privileges that I have that he doesn't. So I think that's the best way to explain it, is there are like some ingrained advantages. And while not every white person is in the best place right now, or not every white person started in a perfect place, there are advantages or perks to just being a white dude. And I think they go without noticing, or you can't go without noticing it, because that's life to you. I remember, this is probably a pretty bad example, but it'll get the point across. I think 30 Rock had an episode about like the handsome bubble, I think, with John Hamm, where he was like a terrible doctor, but everybody treated him so well. And it was just because he was so good looking. And like, I think that happens. It's like, you think that you're so smart and you're so funny. I think that happens to athletes sometimes too, or public figures, where everyone laughs a little harder at your jokes. And you think that you're so funny, and you think that it's because you're so great, or you make a lot of money, and you're like, oh, it's because I'm so smart. You don't necessarily recognize that there are other things that happen to benefit you. Maybe those privileges don't lead to you having a big house and a lot of money, but there are definitely privileges to being for being born into the ruling class in this country.
I'm going to make Dominique stick with us for another segment. We're going to keep this conversation going. I've got more tough questions to ask him, and that's what we're doing here. If you're just tuning in, First Take Your Take. We're having real, open, honest conversation between two people that are friends, but need to have these conversations in a very real way for everybody. I think it's important for the world right now. I'm going to keep it going. Dominique, we're going to make you stick with us for another segment, if you don't mind, my friend. We're going to do all that. That's going to be coming up next. But first, I'm going to tell you about the Home Depot here to help. They have a lot of ways to help. This is actually a true story. Over the weekend, I had a toilet start leaking, and I had no idea how to fix said toilet because I don't know anything about that sort of stuff. So I took off the piece that was dripping. I took it into the room. I took a picture of it with the Home Depot app, and it told me what the piece was because I had no stinking idea. It told me where to find it in my local Home Depot. It told me where, how many they had in stock. I was able to go in, walk in. I was in and out the door at Home Depot in a matter of seconds, and then I was able to come home and immediately fix it. So I felt like the smartest guy on the block. Like, I felt like I had dad smarts all of a sudden because I knew how to fix a toilet when I still don't even know what the piece was actually called. That's the power of the app that they have for Home Depot. It helps you find what you need, and you can do it quickly. You can order what you need online. They can have it waiting for you at the store, or they can even deliver over a million items for free. They also have thousands of how-to videos for projects and repairs when you need them to help you. The Home Depot is here to help. Home Depot, how doers get more done. We're going to get more done on this important conversation next. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. All of our guests appear on the Shell Benzo Performance Line. I haven't said that in a while. I got all mixed up on it. Don't forget, Benzo Synthetic Motor Oil is made from natural gas. Gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Benzo Oil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. We're doing something a little different here. Yes, you guys can chime in. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. For once, and I do genuinely mean for once in my career at ESPN, you know that I have largely been the person that sticks to escapism and sticks to sports. For once, we're not doing that today. the issues that have been going on in the nation are important and the conversations need to be had. And, you know, if you tuned in yesterday, wondered what we were thinking about it, what had to be said about it, Stephen A. had the opportunity to speak yesterday. And I think that's an incredibly positive thing for everybody across the country to get to hear his words on it. But I have a lot I want to say on it, too, because I have meaningful relationships that I've been leaning on over the course of the last few days and the last couple of weeks, asking a different question than I've ever asked before. And that question is, what am I not doing? What could I be doing? Because I've never hidden behind the fact that I am obviously, I turn 43 in a couple of days. I am almost a 43-year-old, middle-aged, white dude. All right. What do I know about these struggles? Why does anyone want to hear my voice? And I've used that as a reason to not have some of these conversations. Admittedly, I've used the reason of escapism and what it means to me combined with the fact that I don't feel like my voice can resonate to this as reasons to not talk about it. And that's changed in me. And that's something that I'm willing to evolve off of because I think it's more important ever that we all be having these conversations because everybody has a different audience. And as we all have different audiences and we can talk about how we can do better. And I don't mean just as a country. I mean, I think sometimes we look at, you know, everything from the top down. We look at it and say, well, you know, this government official needs to be better. This person of high power needs to be better. I am charging everybody that's listening right now to be better in your own personal circle. I think it's incredibly important to start demanding from better from the people that are in your life. Demand a tone change. Demand some level of passion from the people directly in your life every single day to start to affect change instead of waiting for everybody else to do it. Now, I've been talking to Dominique Foxworth from The Undefeated, obviously, and you see Fox, you see Dominique all over the entire network. And Nick, I appreciate you coming back on me. I wanted to have another tough conversation with you because realistically, you know, I hear both sides of it. We hear about the awfulness of what police brutality is, and then all of a sudden we start to see riots and everything comes and turns around and it's like, well, the riots are negating everything that we were trying to accomplish on the other side of it. There's this weird moment here where it feels like, understandably, the black community is not comfortable around police. And understandably, at the same time, you've got higher criminal rates from African Americans, so you've got police officers more on edge when they're around the black community. I can't figure out for the life of me how to unspin all of what's going on because it feels like when both sides are on edge, how can anybody come to any sort of a real resolution?
So I think when these type of debates come up, it's a real test of if you really believe in all men are created equal. That's something that we all say, and it's enshrined in our legal documents that founded this nation. If you really believe it, then I think it's an easy conclusion to come to. So like, black rates of crime are higher. There are higher rates of crime in for black people than for white people, and higher incarceration rates for black men than white men. I understand that. So then you ask why, and it seems obvious to me. If you believe that all men are created equal, then you have to believe that there are some contextual forces, some external forces that create that to happen. Maybe it's the over-policing of those neighborhoods. Maybe it's the history of slavery to Jim Crow to redlining to impoverish those communities. And there is not a poor community in the world of any color that you can find that there are not higher rates of crime. Like, that is obvious. All of us would find any way we could to provide for our families if we were in that situation. And all of us, if we were put in communities that had subpar education and had very little means for opportunity, like where the opportunity is where you're going to gravitate. It just seems obvious to me because the alternative is suggesting that there is some inferiority about that race, if there's no other contextual factor to explain it. And that's not something that any of us who live here would say that we believe. So I think that negates that argument altogether. And I'm glad you brought up the rioting, because that's something that's been bothering me, honestly. Not the rioting necessarily, but it's obviously not good, and I wish that it wasn't happening. But the reaction to the rioting upsets me because it feels so much like the Kaepernick thing all over again, where it's like we're going to debate whether the way they're going about it is right or wrong rather than address the issues. And like, I'm sure there's some evidence out there that the Black Lives Matter protesters are not the ones rioting and black people aren't the ones rioting. But there's also evidence that some black people are. I frankly, I don't care. I think that that is the rioting is a symptom. And everyone's been running around cherry picking these Dr. King quotes. And that's one of them that I think pertains is how the riots are the voice of the unheard. So to me, it feels like saying, well, Kaepernick is, I just don't like the way he's doing it, rather than saying he has the reason why he's doing this is legitimate and we should address that. It feels to me like someone who's overweight looking in the mirror and yelling at the flab underneath their arm. As if that's the reason why, as if that's the problem. That's actually a symptom of the fact that for whatever reasons they are in that situation. Maybe that's a bad analogy, but you get the point.
No, but I think Dominique, you make a really the interesting part of that point to me is, you know, I'll go back to my personal background. Like, my brother served time in prison and had a really troubled childhood. And what's funny to me is, as he grew up, every time there was some sort of a outbreak and, you know, every time there was some sort of an episode, everybody looked at it and we went through all the family therapy things and mental health issues and all that. Like, as we looked at everything, it was always, well, why? What's causing it? You know, why is he doing all of these terrible things? And you look at it with the common goal of, hey, if we can figure out the why, then we can figure out how to solve this and maybe we can save him. I wonder, it blows my mind that as we see the riots, we're so busy worrying about the riots, we're not asking why an entire group of people feel like this is the only way they can be heard. And that's a fair question to start asking.
Yeah, I mean, it's misdirection. And I think, again, it goes back to whether you believe that we're all equal. And I try to remind myself, like, I'm not, it feels like when we have these conversations that I put myself on a pedestal and think that I'm better than other people and I'm telling you how to act. No, like, I know these things or I believe these things because I see them in myself also. And, like, I see the selfishness and the desire to take care of myself. Like, I see that in me and I know it's a human instinct. So, like, I'm not saying this like I know better because I am better. I'm saying I know better because I am worse. And we need other people to accept that about themselves also and be conscious about the efforts they can do to address it. So, I mean, back to the rioting point, like, I feel like it's human nature. And if you are looking for escape, and everywhere you turn, you're getting blocked by something and you call out for help and you're not getting a lifeline from the people who could help you, then I'm not sure how else you're supposed to react. And I know that I have to, like, couch this in all the PC stuff of, like, I'm not condoning the riots and violence is never the answer. But it does frustrate me when people are able to co-opt the conversation and say, well, they're doing it wrong. You're hurting the cause, as if we haven't been fighting this for 400 years. Like, how many years do you have to withstand oppression before violence is the answer? And, like, everyone says violence is not the answer, but you don't have to look very deep in any of our history books to find situations where, quite obviously, we thought violence was the answer. You don't have to look very hard in the Bible or whatever religion that you follow to find examples where violence is the answer. And I understand that right now it doesn't feel like there's a direct path between looting and rioting and fighting. There may not feel like there's a direct path from that to a better way, but there has not been a direct path for 400 years. So, like, I am not going to go out and loot and riot. I'm not going to encourage anybody to do that, but I'm also not going to sit up here and pretend like I don't understand and pretend like if I felt that I had no hope, if I felt like there was no other opportunity, and if I am, and maybe, like, I wouldn't be surprised or I would feel owed. And again, maybe this is me with another bad analogy, but I was a third round draft pick in Denver, and you're not getting paid a whole lot. And I mean, it's good money, but I ended up starting a bunch of games and having some really good seasons in Denver. And I felt like they were, like, I was owed something. And I went on to then sign in Baltimore where they paid me a lot of money and I got injured after my second year. And I didn't really feel that much guilt because I felt like it was owed to me. Although part of me was like, hey, you're kind of stealing right now. Another part of me was like, well, there were several years, maybe it wasn't this team, but several years where I was being underpaid. So again, I'm the king of these terrible analogies, but I'm trying to make it more real. And that to me is just frustrating, because saying violence is not the answer is just factually not true. Not that I'm saying it's the answer now, but it's just a misdirection that it gets us sidetracked to talk about all these other things. And it's unfortunate. And it does feel like I talked about earlier on Levitard's show about how they're in like behavioral economics, like, and maybe I shouldn't, we don't need to go behavioral economics. Just, we all understand how people's incentives happen, like, or what motivates them. Like, it's either a carrot or a stick. And I don't know how to entice people to do better. I don't know how to entice people to fix the situation. So then you come to the stick, which in this case, for me at least, it's like making people uncomfortable and reminding them that this is a discomfort that a certain segment of society lives with all the time. And I've been able to buy my way and my family's way out of some of the issues that face the Black community or face Black people specifically in this country, but I can't buy my way out of all of them. And also, I feel an obligation, like, because I know what's happening, I feel an obligation to do better and to help people do better. But I don't, it's my daughter, I don't know if you heard her yelling, one of my, my two girls and one boy. I don't think she cares that I'm over here trying to fix the world. She just cares that her iPad battery ran out.
Man, Dominique, I care that you're trying to fix the world, man, and I appreciate you coming on with me. I appreciate you being willing to have these real conversations with me, man. It means the world. I genuinely, thanks for coming on with us. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for the perspective, brother.
One last thing. I wanted to make this point before you get me out of here. As you asked about the first segment, you asked about white privilege, and I gave you some examples, but I like failed to point out the most obvious example and the most obvious assumption. The thing that was a catalyst to a lot of us wanting to talk about this now is like the way that police view and treat you. And you don't have to go back very far to think about the people who are doing the open the country up demonstrations with assault rifles and not getting treated the same way that people are getting treated now. And us not having videos of white men getting killed. We have plenty of videos of Black men in recent history of Black men being killed at the hands of police. So that's another example of white privilege. And sorry. No. Bye.
Dominique, it's powerfully said, man. I appreciate you coming on with us. We're going to keep these conversations going. We're going to switch over. Dominique has given us a bunch of time, which I really appreciate, and a bunch of insight. But we're going to get insight next from a close friend of mine that's the highest level of professional athlete you can be, about what sort of level of responsibility athletes have in this and what sort of move they can make. We're going to keep the conversation going. But first, friends, you're back to work at the JOB. The one you realize isn't for you. If you're lucky, right, that's what you're doing. Well, you can still make your move. You can start your new life as an IT pro in just 4 months from the comfort of your own home, even with zero computer experience. Take control of your future now. Go to mycomputercareer.edu. Take the free career evaluation today. Live online classes meet just twice a week. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. More important and difficult conversations coming next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Got a bunch of guests today. They're all on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Don't forget to tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast. Get you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. I'm Jason Fitz. And there's been some conversation. If you're just tuning in, we've done something different today. We're doing real conversations about what's going on. And I got a question on Twitter that says, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to help? I can only tell you this. I had the opportunity when I worked in Nashville for the ESPN affiliate to work with a group that focused, called MEND, that focused on domestic abuse. And one of the things they stressed is that even if you didn't feel like you could help, what you could help is the conversation, the tone, the way issues are changed and the way issues are approached. That can at least be part of it. We're going to continue the conversation coming next. First, take your take. ESPN News.